currently the book of Luke, in chapter 8, Luke 8, beginning at verse 11. So the parable is this: the seed is the word of God. Both beside the root of those who have heard, then the devil comes and takes away the word from their heart, so they will not believe and be saved. Those on the rocky soil are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy. Things have no firm roots. They believe for a while, and in time of temptation fall away. The seed which fell among the thorns, these are the ones who have heard, and as they go on their way, they are choked with worries and riches and pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to maturity. But the seed in the good soil, these are the ones who have heard the word in an honest and good heart, and hold it fast, and bear fruit with perseverance.
Look to turn over to Acts, the second chapter, Acts 2. There's a lot of Bible this morning, and it zigs and zags, and I have no control of it because I stole the lesson, so it's you may want to just pair up with somebody in your row, and maybe one of you do the Old Testament, the other one do the New Testament, and that way you're not zigging and zagging, because there's a whole bunch of just going back to one book. And you go to the New Testament, and you come back to that old book again, and you're like, who thought of that? Well, I don't know. I just stole the thing and stuff. So, look over to Acts, the second chapter, see the end of Peter's lesson and the results of it there. So, we're looking at Acts 2 and verse 41. Acts 2 and verse 41. He said, "Then those who gladly received his word were baptized, and that day about 3,000 souls were added to them." That is a great response to a sermon. 3,000 people obeying the gospel on that. But you notice this thing, it says 3,000 were added. But it doesn't say everybody that heard the lesson obeyed that day. And you think it would say that, everybody that heard it responded, but not everybody did. There were people there that heard and saw everything that the 3,000 heard of. You know, maybe they heard the wind rushing in there. Maybe they saw the tongues of fire above these apostles' heads. Yeah, certainly, they heard the different tongues being spoken by these, and all these men from Galilee and speaking all of these different languages and that. And certainly, they heard the sermon that the 3,000 heard, but you know, while the 3,000 said, you know, hey, Jesus is the Messiah, we understand he's Lord, and I want to call on his name to be saved, and I want to be saved, but there were some that said, not for me, that's not going to happen today and stuff, I'm not doing that. So, again, Acts 2:41 should be saying everybody that heard were baptized and obeyed the gospel, but it just doesn't say that, because not everybody that heard it obey. And why not? Well, let's think about this. Why not? Why do some people just eagerly follow the word? They want to be closer to God. They want to be closer to Jesus. And then there's others that, I'm just not interested in this thing. Or they hear it and obey, and then after a while they fall away. There's reasons for it, but they fall away, but there's others that just get stronger and stronger in the Lord, just get deeper relationship with him, doing all this stuff. So I guess the question I bring up this morning is, what's essential to following Jesus? You know, we look at this, we look here in Luke 8, the parable of the sower, and we went over that thing. He said there's that good and honest heart, that soil that's good, that brings forth all kinds of fruit and that. And he describes it there in Luke 8:15. He says, "But the ones that fell on the good ground are those having heard the word with I've got a noble and good heart." I think he said that good and honest heart is what Tim read there. He says they have a noble and good heart, keep it and bear fruit with patience there. So we see that's the soil that we have. So Jesus is saying that there's these essential qualities that our hearts have to be in for us to be obedient to the gospel, and it's to be essential for us to stay as a Christian through our life. They've got to remain there, or we're going to fall away. They've got to remain there, or we're going to pleasing to God and have that good and honest heart. Because that's what's going to bring forth the fruit. So what does a good and honest heart look like? And what do I need to achieve it? This thing about Luke 8 is not the only soil kind of parable. But go over to Luke, the 13th chapter. We see another parable about this. And in Luke 13, and if we're looking at verse 6, Luke 13 and verse 6, he says, he also spoke this parable. A certain man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came seeking fruit on it and found none. And he said to the keeper of his vineyard, look, these 3 years I have come seeking fruit on this fig tree and find none. Cut it down. Why does it use up the ground? But he answered and said to him, sir, let it alone this year also until I dig around it and fertilize it. And if it bears fruit, well. But if not, after that, you can cut it down. We think about this. Anybody's had a garden. You come across the parable of the sower. You're digging in there, and you got nothing but rocks. What do you do about it? You say, well, we're just going to plow around all these little rocks. No, you get out there, you start getting rid of the rocks. You start throwing that out. That's why they have those decorative stone walls there in Ireland. Where did they get all those stones, you may wonder? Well, they got them out of the field that they're trying to protect there, so they're digging those up. So any good gardener does that. Well, you're looking at your garden and you got nothing but weeds. What do you do? Get that hole out, start getting those weeds out of there. And that's the same thing with our hearts. We might have that stony ground heart or that thorn type of heart. But what do? Jesus is saying, start doing some gardening in your heart. Start getting that rid of that junk that you don't need. Start replacing it with the stuff that's good. You're putting the compost on in your garden. You just replace that kind of stuff. So there's three things we need to have that good and honest heart, that real productive soil that Jesus is asking us for. And the three things are humility and repentance. And the third one is conviction or determination. So if we're going to worship Jesus, we're going to worship God in spirit and in truth, the way he talks about that in John 4. So I always think about this. We have to worship in spirit and in truth. So truth is the highway. Truth is the roadmap that gets us to heaven. But spirit is the car. Or spirit is the gas in your car or the motor in your car. I can tell you, get up here all excited, and I said, hey guys, who wants to go to Scranton, Pennsylvania with me? I got the map here. Well, let's all get in the car and go. And everybody's like, you don't want to go to Scranton, Pennsylvania. I can give you all these. Look, I got a GPS. I got the old Rand McNally. Look, we said, if you're not interested in going to Scranton, you're not going to get in the car and go there. And that's the same thing with heaven. If you're not really interested in that, then all the scripture readings we give you, people know what it is, but your heart's not there. You're not going to go. You're not going to do this kind of stuff. But maybe sometimes it's not the path. It's the car that we've got, and we just need to either get in the car, or we need to refuel the car. Or you've got the same kind of thing there. So we're looking at. But today I'm only going to look at one of these. I'm only going to look at humility. So that means I got two more sermons to go on this thing. So I'll finish this thing around November and stuff. Okay, so humility. And why it's so significant. And I always understand that humility is very misunderstood. So let's talk about what humility is not. What do you think about when you talk about a humble person? What do you think about? A lot of folks think of the guy that's, got his eyes on the ground and he's real quiet and he doesn't say much. And if hey, Can you do some of this for us? I said, you'll probably find people that could do the job better than me. I'm not that good. They're also mush mouth. They got, anytime you compliment them, I didn't do anything. I just like that. And somebody could always do a better job and stuff. That is not what the humble person is. If you go over to Matthew, the 11th chapter, we can see a declaration of a person who said that they're humble. We look at Matthew, the 11th chapter. And this is a notable quote we always get when we're giving people an invitation. Matthew 11 and verse 28, he says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest to your soul. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. We see this is Jesus speaking here. And that there in verse 29, he says, lowly in heart or humble in heart, as some of the translations says. You know, when I think of Jesus, do you ever think of Jesus as being, in a sense of humble, you ever think of Jesus being Mr. Mushmouth, and I don't have any confidence, and I don't know. This is the guy that clears temples out. This is the guy that speaks in front of 5,000 people at a time. He's not timid. He's not shy. That's not what humility is. See, really, what humility is being accurate in our thinking, to have a realistic knowledge of who you are, what you are, and stuff. In Romans, the 12th chapter, see, I'm digging around here once. Romans, the 12th chapter, which is one of my favorite chapters. I can't wait till we get to that, there, Alan. You can go through your own six. Don't worry, I can wait here. So, chapter 12 of Romans, in verse 3, it says, "For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith." Not to be thinking of ourselves too highly, but be thinking true and realistic about ourselves on this thing. True and realistic thoughts about who the Lord is. We have a problem with that too. So I see who I am in light of the scriptures. And I'm going to let the Bible determine my self-image. That's what we always talk about. Be careful who your friends are. Because you get your self-image based on what your friends think of you. And if you've got really goofy friends that's got goofy ideas, I've got so many parents has done it as a teacher. So many students just lead their lives down bad because they got stupid friends that tell them, "Oh, you're really bad at this, and you're really bad, or you don't want to do that, and you don't want to do that." So, and that's where they get that associate. So you look in the Bible, and that gives you your true and realistic version of yourself. You can compare this to. So then I'm going to let the Bible show who I really am. And I'm not going to let the world determine what kind of a person I am. So how do I measure up with the Word? And that's what's going to be the humility. And so humility is, how do I view myself in line with the Bible? And this has been a problem going on a long time. Let's go now to Job 38, chapter of Job. Job 38. Let me say right off the bat here that Job is a book that you need to be on your toes about when you're quoting. There's a lot of folks says, "It's in Job. It's in the fourth chapter. I'm quoting Job," and all this stuff. And you can get away with it. But really, what Job is Job, we know, they're going through a lot of trouble. Has all kinds of devastating things happen to him. So he said that the first two chapters tells us why he's gone through all this trouble. The reason he's going through all this trouble is because Satan is delivering this to him. And God is allowing this kind of an edification for Satan, because Satan is saying that, Job's real righteous, but it's because you put a big old hedge around the guy and you protect him. And so once anything goes wrong, he's going to start cursing you, God. So God says, "Well, go ahead and do this. Just don't hurt him." And he does that, and that's why he loses his family and possessions. And he still doesn't sin. He says, "Well," then Satan says, "Well, it's because you didn't touch him. You start affecting him physically, he's going to curse you." And so, all right, so he allows him to do that, just don't kill him. So we see all those problems. So it's given education to Satan, but it's also given an education to us as reading. Because there are a lot of people that I'm a Christian. And I think I was going to mention that today, but you have this idea of, I heard there was a patrol captain, he ended up being colonel there, but he's different Colonel Michael, but he was saying, like, if it was easy, everybody would do it, everybody could do it. So that's the same thing with Christianity. If it was easy, everybody would be a Christian. So there's a lot of us, we don't know how strong our faith is until we get tested. We need to get tested to see where we're at. But we never got tested. We have all these flaws and stuff. But so that's that. He's saying, like, this is how bad things could possibly get. This is what happened to Job. That's a question for us. But anyway, all right. So on this thing, so you have the first two chapters tells us why Job's going through this. But then from the third chapter through the 37th chapter, you have Job and three of his friends. I think another guy comes in and gives his two cents worth. And they're all saying things about what they think God is. So the friend's position is, well, God isn't the only sucker. That's why it's tricky. They always say, God is great. He can do these things. No, it's true. That means you must have sinned because God wouldn't let this happen to you unless you have sinned. And I kind of wonder if Job's got the same thing. Job's position is, I haven't sinned, and there's been a mistake made. God has made a mistake with me, and if I could just talk to God, I could straighten God out on this thing and show him where he's made the mistake. So that was, for all those chapters, that's what they're all saying. You know, God wouldn't cause this. Yes, he would, and that kind of thing. You know, that God wouldn't have this trouble, and Job saying, no, there's been a mistake made. So now in chapter 38, in verse 1, we finally see God come in here to talk, and we start to get God's position. So chapter 38, and it goes like this, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where are you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who writes the line on it, upon it? And what were its foundations fastened? And who laid its cornerstone? When the morning started sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? So he's asking all these questions. Where were you, Job, when I created all this thing? And what's the answer? Well, Job wasn't anywhere near this thing. Job didn't know anything about this. He has no idea. And through chapter 38, 39, it's the same thing. All these animals he makes, all this kind of stuff. Where were you when this happened? And all the strength of it. So in chapter 40, and then in verse 3, we finally get Job's answer to all this. And in Job, the 40th chapter, verse 3, and Job answered the Lord and said, behold, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice, and I will proceed no further. So he said, really, God has now humbled Job to see himself, see Job as himself there. He's seeing, Job is now seeing himself a lot more accurately than he thought. When he's comparing himself to God, he understands how far down he is. Yeah. So he's understanding who Job is, and he's understanding who Job is not. And he's understanding what God is. So Job gets a big dose of humility. And so Job then now, he realizes he's not God. And also he needs God. That's how bad it is. So humility then is an active understanding of oneself. So which is going to cause us to say, each one of us is going to say, you know, hey, I'm not the Lord. And I need God. So why did so many people in Acts 2 decide not to obey the gospel? Well, maybe they were kind of under the mistaken belief that they are God. They don't need God. I'm right up there. We hear this today from all kinds of people. They have this idea, you know, like, I don't see that that's wrong. I don't think that sin is bad. I certainly don't see God condemning people to hell for that sin. There's a problem with that. I don't agree with God on that. So, you know, I don't care what the Bible has to say. It's my life. So it's all this, look at me, I'm running things, I'm just like God, I'm doing all this stuff. And I'll decide what's right and what's wrong. That shows a lack of humility in that. We go back over here to Romans, the 9th chapter on this, and I see the same thing presented there to the Romans there on this. In chapter 9 of Romans, verse 20, we see that probably these people are like, you know, I just don't agree with this system here, so I don't like this idea. But look here in verse 20 of that. It says, but indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Will the thing fall into him who formed it? You know, would he say to him, why have you made me like this? Does the potter have power over the clay from the same lump to make one vessel for honor and another for dishonor. You know, he's like, I'm not the potter. I'm the clay. That's what humility tells me. You know, how can I direct my life if I'm not God? And you know, that's the thing. I don't know the beginning. I don't know the end from the beginning. God knows the end from the beginning. He can tell what's going to happen before that. I just don't know everything. You know, look at Jeremiah 10, verse 23. That's a common verse we use to talk about the need for the word. He says, but it's not in man to direct his own steps. Think about that. I don't know how to direct my own steps. I'm coming when I realize that. I don't know which path I'm supposed to go there. I can't direct my own steps. I need God to tell me. But a lot of people think I can direct my own steps. I don't need God. I can do this kind of stuff and handle it pretty well. But when we look at that, you know, it just shows a lack of humility. Psalm, the 25th Psalm. We go to this 25th Psalm on this. How the humble person acts toward God there on this thing. Psalm 25, and we're looking at verse 4. It says, show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me. For you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. When I'm humble, I'm sitting back and I'm listening and I'm reading and I'm looking for God to direct me on how I should live my life. Not me just jumping ahead and doing things on my own. We look in verse 9 here of Psalm 25. It says, the humble he guides in justice, and the humble he teaches his way. So all that, if they're not humble, you're not going to be able to be taught on this thing. I'm not going to be able to be led this way. I'm thinking myself equal with God there. So humility is not only necessary to become a Christian, it's necessary to stay as a Christian as well. You know? So we might, and again, to stay as a Christian, you know, we become a Christian, we might start off with that idea of, you know, that God is great and we're not that great. But after a while, there's a lot of folks that kind of start doing that, hey, look at me. I've been studying this Bible a lot, and I can quote things, and people ask me about this stuff, and I just have this great Bible knowledge. I think I'm doing pretty good here in this thing. So, God's up here, but I'm kind of catching on this stuff now, so we're thinking about this. So here's an example of this in Luke, the 18th chapter. In Luke 18, looking at Luke 18 and verse 10, he says, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. So these two guys are going up to the temple to pray. So we're not talking about pagans here. We're not talking about atheists or anything. It's just two people here, the Genesis. So one is a Pharisee. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus within himself there. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men. Extortioners, unjust adulterers, or even as tax collector, I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the tax collector, standing afar off, without so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, this man went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. See what the Pharisees saying? He's using a lot of I statements. I fast, and I give tithes, and I'm not like other men. There's nothing, I don't see any humility here. He's just, I'm doing things pretty good here and stuff. Now, he may not, you know, like he may not think he is God, but he sure doesn't need God in his life. So humility puts us in our place. I'm not going to be seeking salvation if I think I'm God. Now I seek salvation if I don't think I need God for that. So neither is it going to work after I've obeyed you. So humility has to be continuous all through our lives. If I'm humble, I can be taught. I can be taught what God wants me to do, what's right and what's wrong, how to live. And because I'm not God, I realize I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And I need God's help for that. So that's where you see that in Psalm 25. Teach me your ways. You know the ways. I don't know. So if you think you know it all, you're not going to be asking. Let's say in Luke 18, why this parable? If we look in chapter 18 and look at verse 9, He says he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. So that's what this idea, they didn't, people had this attitude, though I'm a religious guy, I don't think I need God as much on this thing. So maybe they couldn't be taught because they thought they knew so much. I already know the way to salvation. Maybe that's the reason in Acts 2 some people didn't obey the gospel. They already thought they knew the way for that. Because you always see that constant fighting of trying to stay with the old law and that. And people thought, like, no, I've already got it. I don't need to hear this. I already got all the information that I need. So you need that kind of idea of humility. You don't know what's going on there. So we're going to look over in Mark, the 12th chapter, and we'll find another reason why we want to be humble. And that is so that we can learn to love God here. Mark 12 and in verse 28. Mark 12 and verse 28. And he said, then one of the scribes came, and having heard them reasoning together, perceived that he had answered them well, and asked, which is the first commandment of all? And Jesus answered, the first of all the commandments is, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. He said, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And this is the first commandment. And the second is like this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There are no other commandments than these. You know, so if I'm not humble, what am I thinking about God? I just think of God as just somebody that's keeping me from doing the stuff that I want to be doing in my life. He's just interfering with my life. But if I'm humble, then I'm in awe of God. I'm just amazed that he's even taken a part interest in me. That's what's in Psalms, the 8th chapter, when he says, he looks at all of the heavens and everything, says, what is man that you're mindful of? Why are you even thinking about me? I'm just a speck out here in this universe and stuff. You know, if we realize then, you know, so I'm in awe that God loves me. That's John 3:16. God loved so loved the whole world and he gives his son. So we're looking at that. We look at there in 1 John 5:3 that this is the love of God, that you keep his commandments and his commandments aren't grievous. That means he's doing these commandments are for our own good because he loves us. He wants the best for us. When I'm really realizing that as a humble person, that God not only is that he's just paying attention to me, that he wants the best for me, then now it's easier to be in obedience there. So that's what in Psalm, the 42nd Psalm, about as the deer pants for the water, so my soul pants for thee. We're looking at that type of thing. All right, so, and also let's go to 1 John, the second chapter, to see another reason why we want to be humble. We need that it's important for us to be humble. 1 John 2, in verse 5, it says, for whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. By this we know we are in him. And he just says, he abides in him, ought himself ought to walk just as he walked. So we're looking at this. If I'm humble and I know where I'm at, then I'm kind of desirous of imitating Jesus. I want to be like Jesus. And what did Jesus do? Well, Philippians 2 just said that he humbled himself to become to save us. And that's why in Matthew 11, 29, Jesus can say, learn of me on this. So if I'm not humble, how can I even start to be like Christ? When I realize how far I am, if I don't see that I myself was that far below Jesus, do I want to even imitate him in this? So it's essential to begin life as a Christian, and it's essential to remain as a Christian, is to be in that humble character. So how do we walk in humility? Just real quick there. We're in 1 John 1. Look in verse 5. 1 John 1, verse 5 says, this is the message we have heard from him and declare to you that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. God is light and there is no darkness. I think one of the problems I've seen from the atheistic crowd and that, or people that, I just don't think sin is that bad. We just think it because we're living in the cesspool ourselves, and we start to think we're kind of used to this. Yeah, I guess it's not that bad. But if you invited somebody to your house, if you invited me, I go, yeah, it's okay if I bring my stuff from the settling tanks over to your house. Get live here in the living room. Maybe you'd be okay with that. No, I don't think I would. So, no, I don't want it. Yeah, it's the reaction. I don't want that stuff. I used to work at a wastewater treatment plant. They'd go, man, can you go down there and clean out the return sludge pumps? Right away, sir. It looked pretty good. And now I go, no, we would not. I would not want that in my mom's house and stuff. So, on that thing. But we think about it. When we think we're even or close to being even with God, then our lives don't seem that bad to him. But to realize that there's no impurities in God, he's all white. There's no wrong thoughts with God. There's no wrong motive. There's a tremendous gulf between us and God there. So we're not just like looking outside of God's creation on this thing. You know, I really enjoy seeing storms come in, even though I just wish they wouldn't cause so much damage. But you get that hot spell during the summer, and then here comes those big old dark purple clouds coming in. That's a powerful storm coming in. And I say, you know, God made that thing. He's the one in control of it. And he just spoke that into existence. So, the other thing, we can't buy, just to realize how big of a gulf it is between me and God, that he still loves me and stuff on this. So I can be walking humble with that. Also, so where to walk in humility, maybe start off with something small. How do they walk around with each other? In 1 Peter 5, Peter just writing in 1 Peter 5 and in verse 5, he says, likewise, you younger people, submit yourselves to your elders. Yes, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. So start off that way. Everybody is more important than me. Everybody is more important than you. And so being humble toward each one, I'm going to try to help everybody out the best I can. But if we're walking around like, well, I think I'm better than this person, I'm better than that person, then I'm not going to be helping out anybody. I'm not going to be doing that. So, but if I look at everybody's more important to me, then I can humble ourselves. So we look over here in James. James, the first chapter, gives us a bunch of things about walking in humility there. But it's just being a doer, not a hearer. In James, the first chapter, verse 22, it says, but be doers of the word and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself and goes away and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues it in it is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one is blessed in what he does there. So we're looking at that, we're just looking at the perfect law, and we're just going to continue it. Realizing if we're a humble person, how far we're going to let that guide us and not our own ideas. 2 Corinthians 13, it just says, you know, examine yourselves, whether or not you're in the faith, 2 Corinthians 13, 5. That's that self-checking all the time. I'm always asking myself, am I doing these things right? You know, my prayers are always, God, I don't know what I need. I'm just praying to you to help me through this and to guide me. So what am I doing? What am I thinking? I'm just comparing myself constantly to the scriptures. So when we see how far I've fallen, then we see how far I need God. So again, finishing up here, the good soil, that's what we want. That's what we're striving for. That good and honest heart. And to have a good and honest heart, you've got to be humble on this thing. So we're looking at here as a way of invitation. If you want to know what to do, well, let's go to a humble person for help, and that's Jesus. And that's what we had that in Matthew 11:8. Come to him because he is humble and lowly at heart, and he's going to find, give us rest. So best is to submit ourselves to Jesus, the one that has a humble heart. So hope this has been helpful for you. So we'll give this opportunity now. If anybody needs some stuff, I know there's a ton of junk going on here. We've got a lot of things hitting us from all sides. Sometimes it gets us down. But just to realize that you've got a whole bunch of people that's really got your best interest in their heart. And here's an excellent opportunity. Don't I always say this, I'll say this 100 times, that God does not give you extra credit for suffering through something you didn't have to suffer through. So if you need some help from some people, let us know. We'll help you out the best we can. And so I ask you to come forward now while we stand and sing our song of invitation.